actually a pretty simple question. What happens? Okay, what happens when you have an outsider that comes to Washington, comes to the White House, and staffs his administration with DC insiders? Huh, Sam Rejofsky here, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC, and we are making radio great again. Happy Friday, 7 p.m. We've made it. Another week is down and out. And now let's do a quick wrap on it, shall we? The reality is, look, so Trump is new to Washington. He comes in, arrives in January, flies in from New York, and what? An early decision, right? There's all these positions that have to be filled. There are people that need to staff the White House. Now, his organization, when you talk about his business, when you look at Trump, the businessman, that is a business that grew organically for decades. I've mentioned this to you before. Hiring the right people in general is a very difficult thing. It is. I have found that for every position, for every solid person that you have, it's taken you four or five people to get to that person. So the retention, you know, the actual retention of good people at the end of the day it's fairly low. And Trump knows this. Most business people know this. It's why businesses grow slowly. They grow organically. And there's nothing worse. I can't imagine. I'm trying to put myself in the place of it, looking at it from an organizational leadership perspective, which is all of a sudden you move. Right. Obama moves out. Right. That admin goes out. The Trump admin goes in. And what do you have? You've got all these empty desks, empty seats, and you have to fill it with bodies. You have to fill them with people. And of course, you're expected to fill them with competent people. Am I wrong? It's the natural expectation. And so, to some extent, you can go to your campaign staff, but those are not necessarily proven people either. I mean, they're people that have been with you for months, not years. And so then what you have to do is you've got to go and you've got to pick The people that are involved in politics are political people. And then Trump brings in Reince Priebus, who you know is his chief of staff. He's a Washington insider, former head of the Republican Party, a political guy, a DC guy. And remember early on the stories, Reince trying to bring in all his top people, all his, you know, he's got loyalists. And these are people who are loyal to Reince. They're not loyal to Trump. They're not drain the swamp people. Okay. They're, if anything, they are part of the swamp that Trump intends to drain. So let me ask you this then. What agenda do these people have? It's not Trump's agenda. It's not. And so when you read these stories, and thehill.com did a massive story on this morning, all the leaks that are coming out of the White House, leakers galore, Matt Drudge tweeting out, there's a Trojan horse deep within. And of course, there's the substantive body of evidence to back all this up. There's probably more unflattering news. Part of this, of course, having to do with the Comey firing. There are a number of unnamed sources painting Trump as being all over the place on it, having fits of paranoia and that kind of thing. And it is interesting. These accounts that are coming out are one, almost uniformly unflattering. But another thing that The Hill wrote that caught my eye is that these stories They often elevate some wings of the White House, some parts of the White House administration, at the expense of others. Okay, so you have factions, if you will. So I would describe it like this. You'll have the communications department, for example, talking crap on the policy guys and vice versa. So what does this mean? And what does this all, where are we with this? Well, I first of all don't envy Trump one bit. I don't envy him one bit, but you must understand that just because there is a leak in the paper, just because there is an unnamed source saying something to a reporter and that reporter writing it, putting it out there, doesn't one mean that the source is right. And certainly doesn't mean that that source is coming at this from a lofty, unbiased, concerned citizen perspective, which is how it's being presented in the media. I mean, I'm almost beside myself. I'm reading these people, there are serious people inside the White House who have decided to take a principled stand against this president. And I cock my head on one side and I look at this and I go, are you serious? These are people who intend to ingratiate themselves into the establishment from which they have come. That's it. You got a guy who worked for some political group that got its business from the GOP, whatever, a political apparatus or some PAC. He then went to work for the campaign or was previously working for Reince Priebus or one of his lieutenants. Goes into the White House. What is that? I'm just going to throw this out. Let's say the person's 25, 35. What is that person's professional lifespan look like? Another 20, 30 years, 40 years? No, it's an important thing to consider because that person's shelf life far and away exceeds even a two-term Trump presidency. And in that sense, a person who is 25 and 35, 50, I don't care, is looking beyond the term or certainly the administration that he's serving in the moment. I'll tell you, as an employer, loyalty in my business, I'll tell you this, loyalty in my business is really important. There's a lot of talk right now about Trump. We supposedly has had Comey in for that lunch or that dinner, whatever it was at the White House, calls Comey in and says, well, I really, and this is according to unnamed sources, which, again, we'll see what that actually means. But the sources say that Trump pressured Comey to declare his loyalty to him. There's no word if that involves some type of blood oath, but, you can use your imagination. And the Trump people are vehemently denying it. Trump saying there's no such thing, back and forth. But I only bring this up to say, so loyalty, trustworthiness is important in my business because I'm an attorney. And as attorneys, we handle sensitive information. And more importantly, we've got a duty to our client. My client is the principal. My client has not just an expectation, but I have a duty to maintain my client's confidences. So if I have a client that brings something sensitive to me, it's very important that not only I keep those confidences secure, but that my entire staff does the same thing. And when you deal with high-profile cases, I will tell you this, it's not always a given. And I have definitely been in Trump's shoes where I am actively ferreting out people with loose lips. Not easy. Doable, but not easy. Now, when you look at the Trump White House and you look at all the people that are in there, the problem, I'm just going to say it here. In my opinion, looking at it and listening to what people have told me and applying my sixth sense, there's a problem with Priebus. The Priebus problem is this. He's the guy that hires and fires. That is what the chief of staff does. The person that hires and fires has the power. You know, on The Apprentice, I'm not too familiar with the show, believe it or not. But I do understand at some point in the show comes the climax, the moment that everybody's been waiting for. You've got the two apprentices. Which one will stay? Which one will go? Now, do they bring up some assistant? Do they bring up a guy in to come in and say, all right, we've talked to Mr. Trump, and Mr. Trump says that you're fired? No, that's not how it goes. How does the show go? Trump comes into the boardroom, and Trump's sitting there, and he's got the scowl on his face, got the big jowl thing going. You know, thank you very much. Good job, but good job. And by the way, you're fired, right? And that's how the show goes. Now, it's important because Trump's the protagonist of the show. And the show's was popular because that people have fed off the drama. But there's something important about that. And what's important about it is that the person that fires you is the person. Everybody in the organization knows the person that hires you and the person that fires you. That's the important person. That's the alpha male or female of the group. And so you've got Priebus, chief of staff, in that function is hiring and firing. And of course, everyone serves at the pleasure of the president. But when you have somebody who is the insider, who's bringing and hiring on his loyalists, who's got the power? It's not the president. And then when you compound that problem, when you have people being brought in who have their own agendas, do not think for a minute that just because somebody who comes into the White House is working in the White House, don't think that just because they're a Republican, just because they're conservative, that they like Trump, that they support what Trump is doing. To them, it is just a job. To them, it is just a gig, and it is a stepping stone for their next deal. That is how Washington works. You know, if I were Trump, I would take every person that worked on another campaign of another opponent. You want to know how paranoid I would get? You think Trump's paranoid? Do you know what I would do? Immediately, I would comb through every person's social media. And if they ever in the past made any disparaging comment about my campaign, I'd fire them on the spot. Do you know what the difference is? Do you know why there weren't any leaks? Because you saw this tweet from Matt Drudge earlier today where he says, well, there's no 8 years of no leaks under Obama. Do you know why? Well, because the entire sycophantic press and Obama's people is the same group of people. They're not going to tattle on each other. It is the same environment. But here in this case, you have a completely and totally hostile press. You know, in an almost, and it's in my lifetime, certainly, and for those of you old enough to remember, and I hesitate to bring it up, and I will in just a bit, more specifically, the Nixon presidency. Perhaps there was this type of hostility back then as well. I wasn't there. But I have to tell you, when you have this type of environment, this amount of toxic hatred, you have a press that is eager to feed on every little leak anytime they can put a source down. I don't care how anonymous and off the record it is, but you and any kind of source that is willing to go on the record anonymously, any person that is willing to talk crap on the president, they will seize on it, and they will reward that person with the kind of kudos that these weak, literally establishment, stuck in Washington, living off this government, mooching off the system, enjoying the political powers that come with being at the epicenter of our political realm. Those are the people that are benefiting from this. And you want to talk about Saturday, what is it, Friday night? I'd be doing a Friday night massacre right now. Guaranteed. Because these leaks. These leaks are the problem, and I don't believe half of them. If that, you got to understand, you think that just because it's coming from the inside and it's a real person, first of all, I always doubt what is. And not every person that inside the White House knows everything. And then the ones that are leaking, those are the disgruntled ones. Do you believe disgruntled people that leave a business? I mean, you shouldn't. You never should. Trust me on this. Did you hear about the scoops? I'll give you a scoop. I give you an example of how much the media loathes Trump right when we come back. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, back after this.
News. Talk. Evolve. 790. KABC.
Before we talk ice cream, let me just digress for 1 minute. Back to where we were discussing these leaks and Trump paranoia and what the media reaction is to all of this fallout from the Comey firing. You know, by the way, when the Comey firing happened, what did I tell you? I came on air a few hours after the fact. And my initial reaction was like, this is really nothing. The funnier thing is the reaction of the media. And that was my first initial sort of visceral reaction that I had. And by the way, I still am there. Okay, the firing's legal. I don't care. Washington Post today ran a story. Trump's words add fuel to questions about legality of firing Comey. I've looked at the code. I've looked at it. It's constitutional. I don't know what to tell you. Look, I understand that this is a venerated, famous newspaper. But this is wrong. This doesn't even belong in the front page. I honestly, if this was newsprint, I would debate whether or not to cut it up and put it in my parakeet's cage for the bird to crap on. I digress. But at any rate, what we have right now, besides news stories like this, are all these, all this talk about Trump and Nixon. I have something here. Hold on, where is this? Ah, here we go. There's a company that uses Nexus transcripts, okay? So transcripts of various news media outlets, Fox News, MSNBC, CNN, and they looked for a series of days since the Comey firing. And they take all the transcripts, they use a program that sort of intelligently deciphers and counts positive references, negative references, and specifically references to Trump and relating him to Nixon. And they found, okay, that the scale is 107 to 11, okay? References, okay, 91% to 9%, where Trump being compared to Nixon versus the Nixon comparison being rejected. You follow? 91 to 9%. It's unbelievable. So everybody out there, here, you don't believe me, here, let's play the montage. It's just a quick little snippet of various reporters blabbing on about this.
I have not seen anything like this since October 20th, 1973, when President Nixon fired Archibald Cox, the Watergate special prosecutor. That firing led to the resignation of President Nixon.
I'm quoting him now. This is nothing less than Nixonian. Do you believe this is another Saturday night massacre?
It has that feel. We face a looming constitutional crisis, very much like happened in 1973, the Midnight Massacre.
What may become known as the Tuesday afternoon massacre.
Very reminiscent of the Saturday night massacre.
Just harkens back, I think, to some of the most tainted actions by President Nixon.
I said that Donald Trump had become president, and he has become president. President Nixon.
Again, echoes of Richard Nixon.
The Capitol is filling with echoes of Watergate. And the question this morning is whether the centuries-old system of checks and balances will swing into action.
Bark, 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 bark. I mean, this is honestly like, Parker, Trump is Nixon, Trump is Nixon. It's a bunch of parrots. So then, You've got to learn how to read Trump. Allow me, please. Tune in, okay? If you need a Trump interpreter. Because I have to tell you, it is against this backdrop that Trump sends the following tweet. James Comey better hope that there are no tapes, with quotation marks, of our conversations before he starts leaking to the press. Do you get it? I have spent the whole day listening to people seriously picking this apart and calling him, what is this, no respect. The Post earlier this morning, Trump's warning to Comey deepens doubts about his respect for the rule of law. Listen, liberals, he's trolling you. That is what is going on here. That is the story. All right. I'll give you the ice cream thing here when we come back right after this. We got John Wolfe up next with the news.
Talk Radio 790.
KABC.
And live from Orange County, Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KBC, 800-222-5222. If you're driving home and want to tell me how much, I don't know, how much you think I'm wrong, don't forget, I'm rarely wrong, always right. Now, this is good stuff right here. I got to get to this ice cream story before I run out of time. Apparently, the Trumpster invited three, we'll call them journalists. Okay, we'll call them journalists. From Time magazine, which I guess through this story, I found out that Time is still in business. I always confuse it with Newsweek. You know, it's only a matter of time. Anyway, so invites three people over from Time magazine, and he serves a dessert. And, well, here's what CNN correspondent Gene Moose had to say about it.
Now, in the blue room of the White House, the president sits down for a candlelit dinner with three correspondents from Time magazine, dining with the enemies of the people. Of course, they're going to notice every little thing. With the salad course, Trump is served what appears to be Thousand Island dressing instead of the creamy vinaigrette for his guests. And then the gem. At the dessert course, he gets two scoops of vanilla ice cream with his chocolate cream pie instead of the single scoop for everyone else.
Two scoops for me, please.
Tweeted one critic, so the whole dominance thing extends to desserts, too?
This is on CNN. Dessert dominance now being the theme of today's reporting about the Trumpster. This incredible story continued on CNN with Brooke Baldwin and Chris Saliza. And listen to this. They're analyzing
this. Two scoops. You know, everyone else around the table gets one. And no word if there were sprinkles.
Right. Well, the broader point here is that they were trying to make in the Time article is, you know, like the White House staff has adapted to Donald Trump's taste. So when everyone else gets water, he gets a Diet Coke. When everybody gets one scoop of ice cream, he gets two.
You've got to understand the level of distaste for Trump. I'm reminded, can I get a little walk through memory lane, if you will, humor me. Obama, 2008, running for the presidency. He was, I think he just got the nomination. He beat out, ruined, schlonged, whatever you want to call it, Hillary Clinton. She's out of the race. And I remember there was a news story about Obama's brand new to him leased airplane for his campaign. Now, generally speaking, and again, this is a fine point I want to make here. Generally speaking, these campaign planes are sort of pre-configured. It's got a basic first class section for the principal, for the candidate, and for his top staff. And then there's, you know, the cargo hold, the kind of coach seating where the reporters and all the aides, you know, pile in. Well, when Obama leased, and it was a 757, I'm an airplane guy, I care about these things, I noticed it was a big airplane, it was a bigger airplane than certainly McCain had or Bush had had previously. Big airplane. And I don't know if you remember this, but they showed pictures of the cabin. And Obama had had the cabin specifically modified with this throne type seat made for himself, and the headrest had his logo, you know, the little O with the path through it. Suspiciously looked like the seal of the President of the United States. I remember all this. But at any rate, he had this throne seat created for him. You know, it was, I looked at it and I go, at what cost did Obama have this temporary plane modified to elevate his oversized, ginormous ego? Spending other people's money, of course. That's another thing, important point. But where was the negative press about that? Just one example of the ridiculous hypocrisy in all of this. All right, I got to talk about my Facebook when I come back. I cannot not talk about this today. Back right after this.
Talk radio. 790 KABC.
All right, we're back. Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation, and looky here. I've told you many times, I have some very normal friends. And by normal, I mean, you know, they're not all deep in the political world. They oftentimes don't agree with me. But anyway, we get along. I have to share this with you, and I'm going to protect the identity of this person. It's off the record source. There we go. Has been leaked. This is for my Facebook, but I want to bring this up because the reactions from the left, it's not just the media, but from the left, from people, from regular good people that I know are decent and intelligent, their reactions, the things that they are putting online and saying is outrageous. I have an example here. I'm going to read this to you, and please, these are not my words, but the words of a absolutely, in my opinion, if I didn't read this ridiculous post, a totally normal person. And here is what this person writes. When I read and listen to the news and think about the current state of America, I want everyone who actively and inactively encouraged the Trump campaign through both direct support and indirect support to know, .. I don't hate you, but I do catch myself fantasizing that one day you'll find yourself in a prison shower with 15 of the most vile people in mankind, and you're the first one to drop the soap. Not because I hate you, because I don't. I'm not saying I hate you, but I would unplug your life support to charge my phone. Because again, I don't hate you. But if you were on fire and I had water, I would drink it. You see, I'm not saying I hate you. All I'm saying, and this is all about Trump people, she's saying this about people that indirectly, what did she write? Directly or indirectly supported the Trump campaign. Yeah. So me, I mean, this is about me. You see, I'm not saying I hate you. I'm saying that if you got hit by a bus, I'd be driving that bus. And this, listen, this is the most important paragraph. This is how it closes. There's a difference. And she's saying it's a difference between the hating, not hating. Okay, here, listen to this. There's a difference. The same difference, I presume, you feel towards the majority of Americans who actively protested and continue to resist him at every opportunity. Now, if you got lost in this diatribe, basically, I'll explain it to you. She wants Trump supporters to get raped in prison. I mean, that's her idea of what should happen to people who support Trump. And it's because Trump supporters feel that same thing toward people who are resisting Trump. And I want to just point something out right now. I don't feel this way at all. I don't, neither do you, I presume. I think that people who are resisting Trump and wearing the Pousset hats and whatever it is, I think you're ridiculous. I think you're funny. I think that you are an emotional mess in some cases. And I think that you are buying in and listening to a media that is an echo chamber. It's like an aviary filled with parrots who are all scrambling to repeat the same thought idea of each other and echoing it and broadcasting it across the universe. But I don't think that you're a vile person. I don't think you're a bad person. And I would certainly not unplug your life support to charge my iPhone. This kind of thing, this is where we're at. These are the people that were yelling that the election, that a week before Hillary Clinton was elected, the election is not rigged. You're just losing, you Trump lunatics. Love, not hate. And 2 weeks later, the election's rigged and not my president. And it's time to riot. Okay, Sam Rejofsky, back right after this.
Talk Radio 790.
KABC.
Sam Rejofsky, Sam Nation here. Robbie, producer Robbie, is asking me if I made a comment on this friend's post when I was talking about last segment here where she... Anyway, listen to the podcast. But did I make a comment on it? Yes, I did. I wrote, this is so funny. Yeah, I'm the king of passive aggressive comments. Wait, you look, the whole idea, the what the press is intending to do with this barrage of negative press. By the way, it all seems, when I'm calling them parrots, it's not just out of jest. They're using some of the same phrases. They're using the same words. They're using the same, examples. It is a true echo chamber. But the purpose of all of this is to destroy Trump, is to slow his presidency. Do you remember? I remember when Obama was elected, and Obama, at least during his campaign, I knew that this was not going to be good. And when we took our first steps towards socialized medicine, I knew this wasn't good. He was taking the country in the wrong direction. So I'll tell you, for me, I didn't want Obama to succeed. So to the extent that I would have any influence over it, for example, if I was in the media, this is exactly the kind of thing that I would do. But the problem was with Obama, the press wanted him to succeed desperately. And it didn't matter that he was basically an empty suit who turned out to not be very effective. If he had had this type of opposition from the media, Obama would have folded like a house of cards. Poof! I mean, he probably would have run away to the Caribbean, you know, on day 91 of his presidency. One thing about liberals, I'll tell you this, they really do. Part of the liberal philosophy is that it's not about ideas or substance or convictions. It's about feeling good. So it doesn't matter, for example, that your economic policy is total rubbish. What matters is how does it make me feel? If I feel good about raising taxes on the rich to help the poor, then that's good policy. I don't want to hear the economics of it. Don't bore me with math and details and, God forbid, reality. But I care about how I feel. So let me tell you this. In that sense, okay, for liberals, this evaluation of the president, the scoops of the ice cream, these leakers, it's not a substantive attack, but it is absolutely entirely based on feeling. And for a person like Obama, when I posit to you that he would have folded like a house of cards, you know, part of the Obama appeal was how good he made people feel good. And so people felt good and they liked him and they voted for him. And the substance of him was irrelevant. If there had been a headwind anywhere close to the type that Trump is experiencing, I mean, that house of straw would have blown right over. All right. Next week, I guess we're back on Monday, 7 p.m. You know the drill. Have fun this weekend. Be safe. And remember, don't get into any accidents, because if you do, who do you talk to? Sweet James. That's right. Our guy. Don't forget Sweet James. Go to his website. Check it out. Check out his picture. He's got a good-looking, dense beard. You got to see it. SweetJames.com. All right. Back right after a weekend, 7 p.m., Monday night. Talk to you then.
Talk Radio 790.
KABC.